Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Bronco Monday. We'll discuss the most recent Boise State game and talk about the upcoming schedule. Now, here's David Allen, Chris Walton, and the voice of the Broncos, Bob Beeler, on 670 KBOI.
8:39, Bronco Monday. Bob Beeler in the house after a great Saturday game as Boise State beats Utah State 72-70.
And I kind of describe that game as kind of taking care of business. You move into a first-place tie. You're playing. Nevada's not. Now, on Wednesday, Boise State is not playing, and Nevada plays UNLV, so they'll probably move back into a first-place tie. But Utah State, one of the teams in the bottom half of the standings, but talented. They beat Nevada, and Boise State takes care of business, gets it done before 7,500 fans. And, you know, a lot of people want to talk about points, et cetera, et cetera. To me, it's defense. They held Jalen Moore, all-conference player, to 4 points.
Wow.
He was 1-for-10 shooting, and it was the first time in 34 games Moore did not get to double figures. Broncos won it, I thought, on the defensive end of the floor.
Now, I didn't see the game. I was just listening to your call, so I'm going to ask you. He's 1-for-10. That can always be misleading. That could be great defense. But did he have good looks that he just missed and great defense?
He had some, and there was great defense.
Okay.
Like anything, it's probably a little bit of both.
Okay.
And he was in foul trouble in the first half. He spent a lot of the first half on the bench. I think he played only 10 or 11 minutes in the first half. So I don't think he ever really got into his rhythm. And because he was sitting, maybe he pressed a little bit. But, you know, if you told me before the game that that Moore was going to get 4 points and McEwen, who had been the leading scorer in conference, who I think is going to be the freshman of the year in the league, would be held to 11 and would foul out, I would have said, let me go to the bank and get as much money as I can get and lay on Boise State, because if those two guys aren't scoring, I don't think enough other people will to beat them. And it was a close game.
Who for Boise State? It seems like every week somebody new for Boise State kind of stands out in some way.
Well, this week it was more of an ensemble cast. Paris Austin had 16 to go with 4 assists. He's really taken off since coming off the bench. Chandler Hutchison, 18-6, and that's pretty much an average game for him, and I say that, you know, very complimentary. I mean, he was 8-for-13, very efficient. David Wacker, I think, is the guy in the middle that's really come on. He had 11 points, 9 of them in the first half, to go with 5 rebounds, a couple of blocks. And this team is, you know, certainly kind of gelled together. And I think, you know, when you look at where they were picked at the beginning of the season with a lot of new faces, picked 5th, this team has far exceeded the expectations. And I think when you look at the individuals, you say there are a lot of good players out there. This team is much better as a group than they are individually. And again, that's a compliment to all of them.
And as will happen with young teams, it was kind of this game is like all games, a little bit of a roller coaster ride. They start out really hot. They're up 11 or 12 early on. Then they give up a 10-0 run. And all of a sudden they're down by 2 or 3. But then at the end of the game, like seniors instead of sophomores and everything, they hit their free throws to salt the game away and win the game.
Yeah, and they were bothered a little bit by Utah State's press. Utah State did something that I haven't seen in a long time as far as consistently. When you're trying to get the press in, they don't guard the guy that's going to throw the ball in. They had 5 guard 4, so there's a lot more bodies on the floor trying to deny, and they did a nice job with it. Boise State did a good job making sure the right guy got the ball, getting it inbounds, fouling, and then, as David, as you said, making free throws. So that certainly takes the sweat out of it a little bit if you got people go to the line, make free throws.
All right, let's hear from Coach Rice. That'll be next on Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
Now, back to Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show. David, Chris, and Bob here with you. Boise State defeats Utah State 72-70 at Taco Bell Arena Saturday night to take over first place in the league. And after the game, you talked to Coach Rice.
Well, Coach Rice stops by to talk to Abe Jackson and myself, and obviously he was very pleased. The team was able to come up with the victory, move into sole possession of first place.
We hung on, found a way to win, and that's, you know, that's the most important thing.
Before we start talking about some of the guys on offense, what'd you guys do against Jalen Moore? 1 of 10, 3 turnovers, only 4 points in 26 minutes.
It was impressive effort by these guys. It was Phil's scout, and he did such a good job getting, you know, Utah State might be the hardest team in the Mountain West to prepare for, because you played against the Stu Morrill era where they got 100 plays, and then with all those plays, if you don't prepare for them, they make you look stupid. But if you spend too much time preparing for it all, then it's too much thinking. Yeah, it's too much thinking too. So it's a fine line, and it's a hard thing to do. And I credit Phil and our staff they really did a good job of getting these guys ready, and then our guys, good second half defensively.
And then at the end of the game, you guys had to attack what I thought was one of the more fearsome presses that we've seen at the end of the game. How you guys were able to get it in and really not panic and take care of the ball.
Yeah, we did kind of just enough, you know. I mean, we got to keep cleaning that up. We got a lot of young guys, and then we move them around different. You know, we got to keep finding ways to do that. And then, you know, Paris goes 10 for 10 the last game, so you get him the ball, and he missed a couple. And so we just got to find ways to get the right guys the ball in the right spots and get those shots up.
Coach, talked to you in the pregame show, and I described your players as chess pieces, that each of them do something different. Well, you brought in a chess piece late in the game, George, and Abe says, well, I think he's just coming in to make sure that he rebounds. Doesn't need to do anything else. And I think he had three offensive rebounds as soon as he got in.
Yeah, he just a credit to what a great – see, that's a reflection of this team is I didn't give him any run the first half. He was sitting over there collecting dust. So we dusted him off and threw him in and said, now go make a big-time play for us. And he did, you know. I mean, goes and gets a
huge possession. You had the ball three times before Reed hit the shot. I think he ran off more than a minute of game clock.
Right.
And I think one or two of those was a George rebound and a George tip to keep it alive.
No question. And you know, that's the beauty of having three of them. He was fresh, he was energetic, and he went and made big, big plays.
You got a bye this week. Last time we got a bye, we didn't do too well.
No, we're going to be locked in, and you know, that bye hurt us last time somehow, some way. I don't know how, you know, we're going to be locked in. We're not going to overdo it, but we can all dial into what we're doing. We can all get better. We can all figure things out and just tighten things out. And you know, Nick will get in and shoot. These guys will get in and make shots, and you know, we'll come back better Saturday.
Coach, thanks for your time. Great win, 8-3 in the conference. Nice going.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. It was a hard-fought battle and really proud of the way our guys handled it.
I know I say it every week when he's on, but I really like him. I've been here about as long as he has, so I've seen him build it up. And he's always very complimentary of everybody else. Mm-hmm. He hardly ever shines the light on him, and he just seems like he'd be a good guy to play for and a good guy to work with.
And I think that that's one of the reasons why this team's doing well. He seems to know how to punch the right buttons, and I don't mean just for the players. He's got great assistants to the new assistants, along with Coach Rilly, who's been here every year. Those guys do a great job as well. That's why this team is 8-3. Run down the standings just to give you an idea how close it is. 8-3 for Boise State, 7-3 for Nevada. Then it goes to Colorado State at 7-4, New Mexico 7-5, Fresno State 6-5, San Diego State 5-5, and everybody else has either 6, 7, or 8 losses. So Boise State right now in a very good position.
That prediction of yours at the beginning of the season really seems to be coming true, where you said that probably whoever wins the conference will have 4 losses.
Yeah, 4 losses, and last year it was 2.
Yeah.
And a lot of people said, well, that seems like a lot of losses. But just to give you an idea, to beat that, whoever wins the Boise State-Nevada game to have less than 4 losses is going to have to win every other game the rest of the season. I don't see it. The league's too balanced. Love to see Boise State run the table, win the league with a 15-3 record. I think Boise State can win the league. I don't know that it's going to be at 15-3 because they still have to go to New Mexico. They still have to go to Nevada. You know, and some other tough ones come in here. Boise State has had a little trouble matching up with Fresno. Well, certainly down there, maybe not here. But, I mean, hey, this is a great season and a great crowd, 7,500, a lot of fun on Saturday night. And it was nice to start a game 6 o'clock after the game. It was the autograph day, and the line was going around Taco Bell Arena to work its way into the practice facility. And Abe looks at me, and as a former player, he goes, well, I'm sure glad they won, because sitting there for an extra half an hour, hour after you lost is always disappointing.
That's
so
tough.
It was extra incentive to win the game Saturday.
You know, we've talked about this a couple times since I've been doing Mondays. And it's not a great conference. There's not great teams like when New Mexico and San Diego State were really upper echelon, top 20 teams all the time. Mm-hmm. But everybody can beat everybody on any given night, as Air Force showed earlier this year when they beat San Diego State. And San Jose State goes to New Mexico. I know Williams wasn't playing, but they go down there in the pit and win that game.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody can beat anybody. So it's good to have your kids sharp for every single game and not take any night off.
Well, you know, and the contrasting side to the fact that we were talking about somebody could have 4 losses and win the league, everybody in the league right now has won at least 3. So a lot of years you'll find some team in the league with 0 or 1, just that bad. But if you don't play well, you're probably going to lose.
Yep.
So if you have a night where you don't shoot, or a night where you're out to lunch on defense and they get, you know, and shoot 65%, you're going to lose.
Yep.
I mean, and I think that makes for a very interesting conference. The problem is you're not going to get more than one team in the NCAA tournament. It's going to be the winner. Now, the biggest thing about winning the regular season is if you win the regular season, you get the guaranteed NIT bid. So you're in the good second tournament because this league is only going to get one. So, you know, maybe if you're the second or third team in the league, I don't know how what it shapes up for the NIT, but you're guaranteed and you might have a chance for a home game if you're the conference winner.
Very good. We'll talk about your week coming up next. This is Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
Now, back to Bronco Monday on 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show. David Allen, Chris Walton, and Bob Beeler here. The week coming up, unlike last week, a little less hectic for you this week.
And we've got the bye.
Yes.
And as you remember on the interview there with Coach Rice, the last time we had the bye, lost the next two after starting 4-0, so hopefully they'll do a little bit better. As we look at the week, this week in the conference, Utah State at Colorado State, San Diego State at San Jose, New Mexico at Air Force, Fresno at Wyoming, and UNLV at Nevada. You would expect Nevada to win that and move back into a tie. I don't know. Without Williams, I don't know that I could say that I'm going to expect New Mexico to win against Air Force. You'd think Fresno maybe, but Wyoming at home is pretty good, so it'll be interesting. Boise State will play Air Force on Saturday. We'll have a coach's show Thursday night at 6. You can hear right here on Sports Radio. Excuse me, I'm used to saying Sports Radio. 670 KBOI. My other show's on Sports Radio, The Ticket. 670 KBOI. And you can join us at the Stonehouse, which is right next to the Ram, 6 o'clock, 6 to 7. And then basketball will be a 4 o'clock tip, so a little earlier than the 6 o'clock we had. Kind of nice when you have tips that don't go at 9 o'clock.
Sure.
3:30 pregame on Saturday.
Touch really quick on the women's game. They struggled and lost a close game
last
to Utah State on the road, last second shot. So they have to have the bye week coming off that bitter taste in their mouth. That's got to be tough to get for coach to get everybody ready for Saturday when they play Air Force.
And they'll be down there. And I think the toughest thing for them is they haven't been healthy in the conference season. They're 5-6. Shea Shaw, who's their best rebounder, is not playing right now. And I don't think some of the other players are as healthy as they were when they started. I think it was either 10-1 or 11-1 in the non-conference part of the season. So, again, Colorado State, the team that played them 2 weeks ago, top team. They've only lost one game in conference play, so there is somebody, and the one loss was to Boise State very early in the season, but the peers in the women's league, there is one team that's pretty dominant.
All right, switching sports for real quick, your thoughts on the signing day from last Wednesday?
I think they got a lot of good players, it sounds like. And again, you know, this time of the year, everybody thinks their class is good, but it looks like they got a marquee quarterback. It looks like they got some impact players on defense. You know, maybe they didn't get as big a number of classes some years that they've taken, but I think that they got quality, big-time quality of what they got, so we'll see.
I like the specialty guys they got, you know, the running back they picked up, the wide receivers they picked up. But you're right. Defensively, I thought this was a pretty good haul for Boise State this year.
Yeah, and they probably needed him. They lost a lot of guys on the defensive side of the ball. They lost a couple starters at D-line. They lost three guys at linebacker, and they lost a couple of guys in the secondary. Right. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think Coach Harsin and his staff did a really good job. You know, the biggest thing is you got to keep people healthy because, and I guarantee, and I always say this, there's somebody in that class that maybe wasn't rated as high star-wise that's going to end up being an all-conference player, and there's probably somebody in that's rated really high that for whatever reason probably won't do as well. And I don't mean just at Boise State. You could say that about anybody's recruiting class across the country.
I don't want to take credit for everything, but I'm going to take credit for everything ever since we started doing Bronco Monday.
Yeah.
The Broncos are undefeated on the weekend.
Well, and I see people have recognized it with a new opening billboard.
Yep.
Your name prominently listed
in
there.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
First, right off the top. We went alphabetically on that one.
Well, I also think that when you're, 3-0 since you've taken over doing this on a Monday? Is that 3-0?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
You know, Coach Rice, I'm sure, is very happy with the results.
And the crowds have been getting better.
Well, I think they've been getting better because the team's winning, number one. And number two, we've played some games at some decent times lately. And, you know, you just looked at the faces at the games. There were a lot of kids that were in the crowd. You know, 6 o'clock, autographs, 4 o'clock coming up Saturday. I mean, you know, you're that time you can go to dinner after the game.
Exactly. Team's playing great. They're young, but I think you're right that their whole is better than their individuals. I saw the one stat here that I wanted to bring up. Nick Duncan. Win marks the 81st of his career, tying him for second most in school history.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool because it seems like he's been here forever, but at the same time, it doesn't seem like he's been here hardly at all. And to have 81 wins already shows the success of the program.
So Mikey Thompson's the one that holds the record, so he would need six more, and he's got 7 in the conference, 8 games. So it's doable to get to the to the top spot, and especially if you make a long run in the conference tournament and get some postseasons, I think he can do it. Struggling a bit from outside, but you know what? A good player, when their shot's not there, finds a way to help other ways, and he does with screens, with rebounds, and with passing.
Bob, thanks so much. Good luck this week. Coach's show Thursday night, and then the game on Saturday.
Right, and I'll see you for Bronco Tuesday tomorrow. Oh, I won't see you. I'll see Chris for Bronco Tuesday.
670 KBOI.
So if you're talking about it...
They're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho. 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show. Oh, boy. Welcome back to the show. 906, David Allen in for Paul J. Seriously, look at this. Watch. There's never an engineer when you need one.
Can't see because we're on the radio.
I wanted you to watch. I don't care about anybody else watching. I had a microphone issue here.
Do you have a wrench or a screwdriver? Because
anybody. Come on, something has to happen. Chris, start the show. Let's go.
Ryan Pacheco is here. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
And if you know that name, I said there could be a lot of reasons why people know that name, and one is that you've been in law enforcement in Boise for the last 13 years.
Right.
And now you're an author.
Well, I've been writing books for quite a while. Mm-hmm. When I was working for the Ada County Sheriff's Office, I was trying to find something. You know, they talk about trying to keep healthy as law enforcement, find something to do outside. And so I started writing novels. Mm-hmm. And so I had about 4 novels that came out, detective, spy kind of stuff.
That makes sense.
And then I started working in detectives on the Internet, Idaho Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force.
Right.
And I spent 2 years up at the Idaho Attorney General's office.
And that's where you got your current book. It's called Raising Net Safe Kids.
Right.
And it says, from the experiences of a police detective who spent 5 years working Internet crimes against children, this is about the dangers that lurk online for kids. And what age kids are we talking to about? Just anybody that's underage?
Well, I think that... this book was really written as kind of a parent's guide to let parents know what's going on out there. Because after I left the sheriff's office, you know, what I wanted to continue to teach what I had learned. And I thought, well, you know, I spent so much time reacting to situations where kids got in trouble online. That's after something had happened. I said, what if I did something where it could be proactive, where maybe we could save some kids from being exploited online?
Start a wellness clinic instead of an emergency clinic. Right.
So I wrote this book so parents could kind of figure out and hear about real cases that I worked. Mm-hmm. I go over cases. I go over real victims, real perpetrators. I go over statistics, a lot of information from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Mm-hmm. And then I talk about things that I learned, techniques that I suggested to parents that seem to work and help get kids back on track if something has happened, but then proactive things that they could do. And, and the advice is the sooner they start, the better. If you try to wait until your kid is 17 to implement some of these things, you're going to have a really tough time. But if you start at 7 and it just becomes habit, then you have a lot more success.
One of the things I read when I was looking through the book is that you don't want to make the internet safe for kids. You want to – no, wait. Because the internet's not good for kids. You want to make sure that with parents around, that the parents are well aware of what their kids are doing. That's what they have to do, make the kids safe. Don't make the internet safe, because the internet's for adults only sometimes.
Well, we don't have the power to make the internet safe. We don't have the power to find every perpetrator who's luring out there in the sewer of the internet. We there are some good law enforcement people out there working the best they can proactively, whether it's undercover, in an undercover capacity, to try to catch some of these perpetrators, but we can't get them all. So it really comes to parents educating themselves on what's the current dangers are that are out there, and making sure that they're keeping an eye on what their kids are doing.
Some parents, I'm sure, you know, they're very well aware of what their kids are doing most of the time, but not all parents.
Right.
And especially with teenagers, you have a tendency to think, well, you know, I know that they just get on Facebook, or they just get on this and you know, Instagram or whatever. I'm not worried about it. But quite often they get on more websites than you know about.
Oh, very often they get on more websites than you know about. Matter of fact, I talked to a teen one time who said, and parents who tell me, oh, I know what they're doing online because I'm friends with them on Facebook. Well, Facebook is not the number one place where kids are going these days. It's where all the old guys like us are on. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing Facebook, but the kids are everywhere else. And they have kids have a lot of profiles parents aren't aware of.
Snapchat, for one.
Absolutely. And we go into Snapchat, and it's not all that that kids even think that it is. They think that stuff disappears. It never disappears. It's still out there. But you have to pay attention to what's going on online, what your kids are doing. And parental controls and technology is not enough. You have to be proactive as a parent and really be with them and watch what they're doing and monitor it.
Does it ever come to a point where the parent has to, you know, get the computer or get the laptop or get the iPad or something and simply just go through it and see what you can find or even get some help?
I suggest that. Mm-hmm. I suggest that's your responsibility as a parent. I say in the book, Snoop on Your Kids. It's okay. I give you permission to do that. And a lot of parents say, oh, no, I want them to trust me and I want them to know that I trust them. And if I do that, that's a violation of that. But I think with the internet, even if you trust your kids, you don't trust the perpetrators on there because they're out there and they're very savvy and they're very smart and they get kids and really good kids a lot of times through my experience and in my cases, some really good kids have been convinced to do things they wouldn't normally do online because these guys groom them and they're very patient, sometimes spending 6 months before they try to meet their target in person. So you have to snoop on your kids and find out what's going on. And what's the worst thing that could happen? So you snoop and you find out they're not doing anything that they shouldn't be doing. They don't know that you snooped and you're good and you have ease of mind, right?
Right.
But you may find out that, yes, they're engaging in behavior that is risky, that they shouldn't be, or you find out that somebody is targeting them.
So the perpetrator obviously is a big part of this. How big a part does the fact that most kids want to believe in the innocence of life and they're very naive when they're 7, 8, 9, 10 years old and you get them, you know, a Facebook account because they want to send pictures to grandma and grandpa and everything. And so how much of a role does that play?
Well, you know, the younger kids are, the more that they believe they're invincible and that bad things, you know, couldn't happen to them. And so, I think kids, especially the younger kids, they're so involved in the interaction. You know, a lot of you have these games and even the game consoles. We're not just talking about computer games. You have these game consoles that have cameras on them that you can battle people, strangers that you don't even know, you know, in different parts of the country or different parts of the world. I work cases where I had a 9-year-old boy here in the Valley, and I responded because he had been playing one of the game consoles and he had been battling some guy, and the guy he was battling online convinced him to turn on his camera and take down his pants in front of him. And how did he do that? Well, the number one thing that this boy wanted to do is continue to move forward in this game that he's playing, right? So the guy said, well, I will give you these extra powers to get further in the game. I'll give those to you if you will do this. And that's how he coerced him into doing things that he wouldn't have normally done, but he really just wanted to win the game. But he's just a small child.
How often are kids friends with somebody on social media that they don't actually know in person?
A lot. When I go talk to kids online, or kids at school, and I talk about their online and their social media accounts, even I talk to them about Facebook, and I ask them, how many friends do you have on Facebook? And, you know, it's a status thing. If they have a lot of friends on Facebook, they feel popular. They want to be popular. I've had kids tell me they've got 3,000 friends on Facebook. I said, you know all these people? Well, yeah, I know them. You've met them all face-to-face. Well, not face-to-face. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they it's a status thing. It's about popularity. It makes them feel important and feel, you know, real popular.
Now, how many kids have engaged in some sort of activity, like somebody talked them into sending them a graphic, you know, picture of something or even, you know, naked pictures of themselves? How many end up, I don't know if the proper term is to fall for that, but how many end up getting into that?
I would say a lot. I don't know that there's specific numbers. I was at a conference last year where the speaker said that with the technology that we have today and the things that are going on, she said that 99% of all kids who are born now up until they're 17 years old are going to be approached online in some way inappropriately, whether that means somebody instant messaged them and asked for who they don't even know and asked for a naked picture, or sent a sexually explicit picture of themselves to this person, or asked them to engage in some sort of inappropriate conversation. Even if they don't instigate it, every child in some point is going to be faced with a situation that is uncomfortable for them. And we need as parents to talk to our kids and let them know what they should do if something like that happens. And what's really important is that when these kids start developing these relationships with strangers, over time, they learn to trust them. I've had cases where I've had teenagers who have never met this person face-to-face, but they had spent so much time with them online, they were convinced that they were in love with them.
Wow.
And so they're 13 years old. They're in love with a 42-year-old man who lives in Connecticut. And at some point, you know, maybe he'll drive over and pick her up, or maybe send her a bus ticket, or you know, these things do happen, and they happen right here in the Valley.
Ryan Pacheco, author of Raising Net Safe Kids, is with us. We will be back and give you some tips on how to keep your kids safe. 670 KBOI.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
Here's your rewards code. SAFE, S-A-F-E. Go to KBOI.com, enter the keyword SAFE, get your 5,000 rewards points. Ryan Pacheco, RaisingNetSafeKids.com, and also the same book with the same name, Raising Net Safe Kids, is our guest in the next title studio. I see here you have that online sexual predators' choice target age range is kids 11 to 14. I want to go the other end of the aspect and say the predators themselves, is there a type?
Yeah.
I mean, is it 24-year-olds? Is it 48-year-olds? Is it everybody who's not 11 to 14?
Yes. Yes. I've seen in my cases, and the national statistics say the same thing. You have men who are in their early 20s up to men in their 60s, and you know, everywhere in between. I've worked cases with where our perpetrator was in his 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. And you'd be surprised. Some are very well-respected people who make a good living and go to church every Sunday. And, you know, then you have guys who, you know, are almost homeless. So it's kind of the same way as our victims are, because I have victims who are, you know, who are living in very nice, comfortable family situations with the mom and dad who are trying, you know, doing all the right things and make a really good living. And then you have, you know, people who, you know, are struggling a little bit. And everywhere in between, there are no cookie cutter victims. There are no cookie cutter perpetrators.
You said guys, though. Is it always men?
About 95% of the time,
wow,
it's men. Very rarely is it women. I've never had a case with a female perpetrator, but there have been some that I've read about, but I've never had any.
Tell you, when parents read this book and some of the real life experiences that you've had, just reading them on the page are chilling. I can't believe what your attitude was like. I mean, obviously, as a policeman, you have to be different than me if I'm in the room with them, because I would want to just fillet them out loud. But what kind of a vibe do they give off when you meet these perpetrators who are doing these things to kids?
That's an interesting question. I haven't put a whole lot of thought into that, but I would say there's two things that I've seen. A lot of times you just feel evil because these are adults who are preying on children, sometimes very young children, especially in the child pornography cases that I worked. You know, if we're talking about child and online enticements, you know, they're both evil. There's other times where, you know, I you almost feel sorry for them if that's appropriate thing to say, because they've made such a bad choice in life. And I guess what I should say is I never felt sorry for the perpetrator that we arrested. Usually who I felt sorry for was his family, because more times than not, after he's arrested, we do a search warrant. We go collect all their electronic devices at their home. And almost always there's a wife who answers the door and had no idea that the husband was doing this. One of the last cases that I worked before I retired, we went to the house, we served the search warrant. Wife answers the door holding a newborn baby in her hand.
Oh, wow.
And then you have to tell her that her husband's been arrested for enticing a child online. Very sad.
Have you ever met the family of one of these guys that wasn't surprised?
Most of the time, the family seems surprised. There's been times when we've arrested a suspect and I've listened to his jail phone calls, and a family member says, "I told you to quit talking to underage girls online."
Wow.
So they knew that he was engaging with them online, but they didn't. I don't think they knew that he was actually meeting with them in person. But they said, "I warned you. I told you you had to stop doing that." But, yeah.
Well, one of the statistics that you quote is that 29% of parents have absolutely no restriction on their kids when it comes to the internet. Okay, so that's 29 that have no restriction. How many have just light restriction?
I haven't seen any statistics on that. Yeah. I think that most parents have light restrictions of some sort. And this all depends on age appropriateness, too, as well. You would hope that if they're 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, you have a lot of restrictions on, you know, what times that they can be on, and you're paying attention to where they are and who right. they're talking to, and hopefully they're not going to chat rooms at that age. And then when they're 17, you know, you may not yeah. need as strict of restrictions.
When, for instance, when Paul Jay's daughter was growing up, they had one computer in their house, and it was in their living room. Mm-hmm. So if she was on it, they were always in the living room with
yeah,
her.
That's what I always suggest, except technology has changed since then, right? Because now we have the phones and the tablets that all – I mean, almost everything connects to the internet anymore, right? So what I suggest to parents in the book, and we go into it in depth, is don't let your kids take their electronic devices to bed with them. Can't mm-hmm. tell you how many parents say, you know, I wondered what was going on when I caught them texting at 4:30 in the morning. You know, I tell them, put it in the kitchen, have it charge in the kitchen at night while everyone's supposed to be in bed. And then it's, well, what if they sneak up and get up? Well, put it in your room. If you're too light of a sleeper, you know, put it in the safe. Find somewhere safe, because the kids should be sleeping in the middle of the night, not texting.
926 at 670 KBOI. You can stick around, Ryan?
Yes.
All right. Coming back, I want to come after the news. I want to talk about the website and how parents can find out a lot of the information we're doing and what that's all about and how we can help them out. It's 926. News with Rick is coming up next.
Is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show. David Allen in for Paul Jay. Chris here with me. Ryan Pacheco, Raising Net Safe Kids author, and also the website raisingnetsafekids.com. Tell me a little bit about the website.
Well, we put the website together to kind of be a resource for parents, place that they can go to find out new things that are going on, new trends, what, you know, I found out the kids are doing. I also post to a lot of arrests that have been made, because it's real. I think it makes a big statement when somebody actually reads a news story and say, mm-hmm. well, this guy actually got arrested for doing this. But there's a lot of free content. We have a blog. You can go in and you can read our blog postings. We have some workshops, video workshops that are free. And then we have the book. You can buy the book on our website, raisingnetsafekids.com. It's also for sale at Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, both ebook and print form. And then I have about a 2.5-hour online course that kind of covers it's kind of a companion to the book, but I go much deeper into the case studies. I go much deeper into the statistics, and then more tips on how to keep the kids safe. And the cool thing about it is it's set up in 3 modules that have a bunch of parts to it. So you can go in, if you only got 10 minutes, you can go in and just take 10 minutes worth of it and then come back to it, you know, go cook dinner. And then after dinner, come back to it and do another module that's maybe 6 minutes. And, you know, you can get it all done in one day, or you can take a month to get through it if you want. But it's pretty cheap. And I'll give you a promo code now. If you go to the website and you want to get the course, it is a paid course, but there's a promo code when you go to checkout, 40% off. Put that in and you'll get 40% off the cost of the okay. course, which is pretty low. I think it's like $19.
Nice.
Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest thing that parents are not aware of that kids are doing online?
Well, I think that the biggest thing that parents aren't aware of is the thing that they don't want to be aware of. Mm. And I think that what's going on out there right now is that there is, I think, a real huge issue with kids in sending these naked selfies around. It's not a big deal. Everybody's doing it. They don't think it's anything to be worried about. When I was working in law enforcement, we do phone extractions from teenagers. I would be shocked if we didn't find naked selfies of that teenager on the phone and really? Other teenagers. And what they don't realize is when they take a naked picture of themselves and they send it to somebody else, whoever they sent that to, even if they're underage, they're now in possession of child pornography. And that's a felony, even if they're under 18. And the person who sent that, even if it's of themselves, they've distributed child pornography, which is a felony. But everybody does it, and everybody sends them, and they think that if they're using something like Snapchat and they marked it for 5 seconds to disappear, then it's not going to be there anymore. And I'm here to tell you that it is still there. It's still on that phone. Just because it's disappeared off the Snapchat app, it's still on that phone embedded somewhere, and an extraction will show it. And then, of course, there's also those apps that a lot of people have where if somebody sends somebody a Snapchat picture, they use this app and it automatically captures that image. So even though it's disappeared off the Snapchat app, it's still in their photo album now. So it doesn't disappear. And then, of course, when that person has that image that they've sent, if it's suggestive or even naked, they can do whatever they want with it. They can upload it to other websites. They can send it to all their friends. They can text it to people. I mean, it can go anywhere. It could become viral. It gets on the internet, and there's no way to get it down. It could be there forever.
Two-part question for you. I know that there are parents out there that are listening or saying, not my kid.
Right.
First of all, what do you say to them when they find out it's their kid? And the second part is, have you answer that one, then I'm going to figure out how to word the second question.
Yeah.
But what do you, when parents say, when they come to you or you're at a school or you're given a lecture and they say, well, that's not my kid, you're not talking about my kid.
Yeah.
What do you want to say to those parents?
I would say, I hope you're right. I would say that 80% of the cases that I worked where I had a child that was exploited online and I had to go in and have a conversation with the parents about it, they said exactly that. I can't believe it. I would have been the parent who would have said this couldn't happen to my kid.
Are parents more surprised that their kids are just doing something or that they were able to be talked into it or persuaded?
Both. Yes and yes. Yeah. I think that what happens with these perpetrators and like we talked earlier about, they're so patient and they groom and they develop rapport, and especially kids who maybe are a little have self-esteem issues or are really shy, but for some reason when they're behind a computer screen or behind their phone, you know, they kind of bloom and they become a different person that they're not in real life, and they start developing this trust and rapport with this predator who's being very patient and starting to groom this person. And then they do things that they would never normally do because, like I said earlier, they've developed some sort of feelings for them, even though they've never met them in real life. They've never met them face-to-face. Maybe they've had some phone conversations. Maybe they've Skyped, but they've never had face-to-face interaction, but they've spent the time, the perpetrator spends the time to develop this relationship, and then most of the time they talk the kids into doing things they would never normally do.
Here's the second part of my question. It's like a DUI. Whenever somebody gets popped with a DUI, I'm always sure in my brain that that's not the first time they've ever been drinking and driving. It mm-hmm. just happens to be the first time they get popped. So then my question is let's say you catch your son or daughter doing something at 13 that they shouldn't. And they say, oh, I'll never do it again. First of all, that's probably the first time they get popped is just the first time you catch them. That's not the first time they've ever done it, probably. And you shouldn't believe the kid, right? If they say, I'm never going to do it again, isn't it intoxicating almost to them? And like you say, they're sending naked selfies, right, and they don't care. They don't think it's a big deal.
Well, every child is different.
Sure.
So it's hard to say. But what I would say is that I think it's the Ronald Reagan quote, trust but verify.
Mm-hmm.
Snoop. That's the only way you're really going to know. Find out what your kids are doing. If you as a parent don't know the swipe code to your kid's iPhone or whatever their phone is, if you don't know how to get into their phone and look and see what they're doing, you're making a big mistake, a dangerous mistake. If they have profiles or users on the family computer, or even their computers or their iPads, and you don't know how to get into those and check to see what they're doing, that's very dangerous risk you're taking.
I think it would be hopeful that your kids get to a certain age and they have not, you know, live their entire life being in charge.
Right.
And so I think I would just tell the kid as a parent that, you know what, this is not snooping. I have the right to know exactly what you're doing. And by the way, every night I'm going to be checking it. And yeah, you can't just erase things because they're still there. You
know? Right. Yeah, I think that's true. I think that if you start early, which is what I really try to push, as soon as you start letting your child use the electronic devices and get onto the internet, maybe that's 6, maybe that's 10, 12. If you start with these kind of rules, yes, I'm going to be looking to see what you're doing. No, you're not going to lock me out of these devices. If the earlier you start, and it just becomes, that's just the way it is. It's a habit. It's the, mm-hmm. the house rules. And as they grow older, it doesn't change. Now, I know that gets harder to enforce when they're 16 sure. and 17 years old. But if you start really early, and that's just the way it's always been, you're going to have a much easier time keeping those rules than you are if you wait until something has happened at 16 or 17 years old, and then you're trying to get control of it. Now, sometimes that's exactly what happens, and I get emails all the time from parents where something has already happened. And you know, in the course, we go over some suggestions on what you can do. But the biggest thing is, I believe that internet safety, online safety for kids begins with parents and kids offline. It's like anything else. You have to talk about, we were talking earlier in the break where we talk about, you know, parents are really big on talking about stranger danger when kids are going out in public and when they're walking to school, you know, whether it's kindergarten or first grade, you make sure they know the path. You talk to them. Don't get into cars with strangers. Don't go into neighborhoods you're not, you know, familiar with. It's the same way online. There's stranger danger online. You got to teach it.
How often does a predator contact a child and then actually eventually set up a meeting?
I don't know that there's just statistics for that. Yeah. I think that they start grooming this person and they see where it goes. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be a little bit different because every child's different. Every child responds differently. I've worked cases where a predator has met a victim in a chat room and met him in person face to face and exploited them in the same day. Then I've had cases where I've had them meet in a chat room and not meet in person for 6 or 8 months before they exploited the child and everywhere in between. So it happens sometimes really quickly and other times, you know, they're patient and they wait. And it's not just local to local. So I've had cases where men have traveled from out of state to victimize a child in the Ada County area.
I'm sure you've heard stories like this. My niece, when she was 13, got a text on her phone, said hi. Mm-hmm. So she wrote back hi, and it was a number she didn't know, just came across. She was in New Mexico, so it just came across as a number. And then they texted back and forth for a couple hours. And then he said, hey, the number said, hey, can you send me a picture? And she only had like a school picture on her phone. So she sent that. Like after a couple hours, they researched it. It was like a 34-year-old guy that was just randomly pumping out phone numbers to see who would reply back. And she's naive at 13 thinking, oh, this must be one of my friends. I just don't recognize the number. And then she sends a picture away and the process starts.
Yeah, they don't think anything about it because it's the technology and that's what they do. I got a call over the weekend from somebody who is having an issue like that. And, there's things that you can do, and it depends on how strict you want to be. But you know, even on these phones, you can set parameters. You can say they can only answer phone calls from this number, and they can only be on the phone. It'll only work from these hours. But again, we can't just rely on technology. We've got to be, you know, we've got to have that face-to-face interaction with our kids.
I say lock them up until they're 30. 9:47. We'll be back to finish up with Ryan Pacheco after this on 670K. 9:52. Ryan Pacheco, former cop. Author, RaisingNetSafeKids.com is the website. Raising Net Safe Kids is the book, and every parent should get it. I have no children, but seriously, I was chilled to the bone reading some of that stuff. And I'm 55, and so I'm naive in all of that. And I'm thinking, has the world changed so much? Is it because the world's changed so much, or is it because I'm 55, or is it both?
Yeah, I think it's both. When I made a conscious decision when I wrote the book, I wanted to make sure, you know, real stories make a bigger impression than telling about things that could possibly happen. So I tried to find a balance with the cases and the case studies that I put in the book. And some are very shocking and I think they're all really scary because they really did happen. And when you read them, you think, if this was my child, you know, you can't help but think about that. And it really scares you. I've gotten emails from parents who've read the book and said, I had to just read it in little pieces at a time because I had to sit it down and take a break. But I tried to make it really upfront. I didn't sugarcoat, you know, because it's got to make an impact. Otherwise, it's not going to serve its purpose. But I tried to keep it short, too. I didn't want it to be novel length. I didn't want it to be, you know, 80,000 words where, you know, even if they dedicated a half hour, an hour every day to read it, it would take them a month to get through it. I wanted them to get it and be able to read it through pretty quickly, get the message, and put it into practice.
You mentioned the kind of predators that will, you know, groom a kid and then ask them for photos. Mm-hmm. Suggestive photos, and then maybe share them with their friends. Now, that reminds me of, you like, you hear on TV about the dark web. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess I don't know much. Well, I don't know anything about the dark web except what I've seen on television. Are there a lot of people in that, and are a lot of them in this kind of where they trade photos back and forth?
I never worked any cases on the dark web. I know that it's becoming a real point of getting attention with the feds, and they're starting to work. There is a lot of child pornography being traded there. I know that for a while there, the dark web there was a lot of drug activity, sales of drugs going on there. But they have found that there is a lot of pornography trading. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There isn't a lot of enticements of minors on there because there's not a lot
of kids.
There's not a lot of kids there, and if they do get there, they don't know know where to go because it's not real that easy to maneuver in there if you've ever tried to get in there. And I've spent a little bit of time in there. But there is a lot of child pornography being traded in there. But I don't think it's a worry as for parents right now because I don't think there's a whole lot of kids spending a whole lot of time in there. At some point, maybe so. But right now, we're not that I'm aware of, we're not seeing that.
As we wrap up, I want to ask you on a personal side because I've been fascinated by this since you sat down. If you had a case where you were a 13-year-old girl and you're on the web and you're doing all this stuff and this guy's sending stuff to you, after you get done that case, how long did you need to decompress before it didn't affect you? Or were you able to just break and say, this is my job and I'm not going to feel like I need to take a shower afterwards?
Compartmentalize. Yeah.
And you can compartmentalize all that.
No, I think that I spend a lot of time in the gym working out, trying to keep myself safe. I work on keep my mind safe. I work on writing those fantasy novels, the spy books. That really helps keep things safe. But you know, there's some cases that haunt you more than others. More than once, when we arrested a perpetrator on one of these cases, we found guns in the car.
Wow.
And so you know, why would an adult be picking up a 13-year-old who he thought was a 13-year-old girl and have a firearm in the car? So that haunts you. So some cases haunt you a little more than others. I don't think it's anything you ever forget. It's kind of like when I was a traffic cop and you had a really, really bad accident, nasty accident. You never really forget some of those images. It's the same thing. Even cases that I worked undercover and, you know, I'm thinking to myself, we've got to get this guy because if he moves on, he's going to get a real victim.
The book is Raising NetSafe Kids. The website is RaisingNetSafeKids.com. Detective Ryan Pacheco, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Paul Jay will be back tomorrow. Rush is coming up next. You're listening to 670 KBOI.